Good morning. I was out at the construction site there. We had a chance to go by Douglas and Colburn. It's where they're building the city's new recycling center. And the center that I must say I'm pleased that my students designed that for the city. And I was over there taking some pictures yesterday and grabbed up a piece of pretty old dirt. See some clay in there, very brittle stuff. Just kind of just looking at the soils. You know, clay is a naturally occurring material composed primarily of fine-grained minerals which show plasticity, the ability to change shape, through a variable range of water content. Of course, this piece that I found this day or so ago has very little water content. They're not very usable at this moment. And which can be hardened when dried and or fired. Clay deposits are mostly composed of clay minerals, and minerals which impart plasticity and harden when fired and or dried, and variable amounts of water trapped in the mineral structure by polar attraction. Oh boy. And these clay minerals are typically formed over long periods of time. And so, got to thinking about the word clay, about the concept material of clay. Now, the Bible teaches truth, here little, there little, line upon line, precept upon precept. When the Bible discloses truth using symbols, the meaning of that symbol is never changed, but often amplified and expanded as one moves forward through the narrative of the Bible. I'm glad that Zach chose that last song about the great I Am. Because this morning I'm going to bring to you the concept that we were formed in the image of the great I Am. When the people asked Moses, "Who has sent you?" And Moses said, well, he said, the I Am has sent me. Man was created from the clay of the earth. In Genesis 2 and 7, and the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life. And man became a living soul. From the dust of the ground. Think about that for a moment. The dust of the ground from which we were formed. Dirt. Clay. Rock. Now, we didn't come from that by some random happenstance of probability, as many would have you to think, by some huge explosion countless ages ago. The great I Am took the dust of the ground and formed us and breathed life into our nostrils, gave us a soul. You know, dust and clay are often used interchangeably for soil or earth from the ground. The word Yatsar, which is in that Genesis 2 and 7, translated in this version as form, means to mold as a potter molds clay. The biblical symbol of the potter and the clay, when applied to man, therefore makes references to man as created by God. Man related to and linked to the physical world. And men, man the perishable and the mortal. God is the great potter. The sovereign God has the right to create or to remake any man, and the clay has very little, if anything, to say about it. In Job 10 and 9, remember, I beseech thee, that thou hast made me as the clay, and wilt thou bring me into dust again? In 1 Corinthians 15 and 45, and so it is written, the first man, Adam, was made a living soul. The last Adam was made a quickening spirit. Howbeit, that was not first which is spiritual, but that which is natural, and afterward that which is spiritual. The first man is of the earth, earthly. The second man is the Lord from heaven. As is the earthly, such are they also that are earthly. And as is the heavenly, such are they also that are heavenly. So basically the title of my talk this morning is, In God's Image. We are made in God's image. You all probably had pottery class. I know my children have taken art in class. Where'd that clay come from? You know, you got this stuff right here that I pulled from the site out there. Not much you can do with that, is there? It's very brittle. Got a lot of mineral deposits in there. Can't do a whole lot with it. Crumbles up, dry. As opposed to this stuff right here. You can mold it, bend it, shape it. This used to be this. You know, pottery is clay that is hardened by fire, and pottery comes from the Greek word work, keramos, which means potter's clay. And depending upon the clay and the temperature, it can turn red, buff, yellow, brownish, brown, or black. Just maybe a reminder of maybe the class you took. In step one, a potter first must find the proper clay. Again, it may be something like this. Okay. And clean it. Fancy that. Clean it. To make it usable. Now, if the artist buys clay at a store, Hobby Lobby, when I got that, he can skip this whole step. Raw clay is washed in large pots, called blunders, I didn't know that, to remove pebbles and sand and dirt and whatever else is in there. You can see the clay in there, it's pretty evident. There's a lot of stuff in there as well. In step two, clay is moistened to make it more flexible, like I showed you right here, okay, and easier for the potter to handle. It's like I showed you right about in Hobby Lobby. In step three, the next step is to actually form the object. This can be done by throwing on a potter's wheel. How many here have taken pottery and done the potter wheel and see a show of hands? Who's okay? We got a teacher over there, probably did that in one of our methods classes maybe or whatever, I don't know. But you know the old potter wheel, just toss it down and spin it around, okay? And throwing means a shaping a big chunk of clay by spinning it on the potter's wheel. It can also be done with a mold. Step four, after the object is shaped, it is ready for firing. Now, how hot the fire is depends upon if the object is going to be pottery, about 1400 degrees Fahrenheit, porcelain, about 2700 degrees Fahrenheit. And, of course, it's fired in a kiln. We all probably know that. And then step five, that's when the decoration and all that kind of stuff takes place. So man, God created us from the clay of the earth. And, you know, the potter, being God, has right over the clay. The clay has nothing to say about what's going on. He slaps it down on the potter's wheel, gets it all wet and spinning around. The clay's just sitting there, spinning on its merrily way. Nothing to say about that. God's in charge. Clay is mentioned in the Bible about 30 times. And of those 30 times, very seldom is the commentary very favorable. Look at clay. It's unrefusable. Dirty. Gross. Okay? Reading from Isaiah, the 29th chapter, in verses 15 through 16. Woe unto them that seek deep to hide their counsel from the Lord, and their works are in the dark. And they say, who seeth us, and who knoweth us? Surely your turning of things upside down shall be esteemed as the potter's clay. For shall the work say of him that made it, he made me not? Or shall the thing framed say of him that framed it, he had no understanding? A lump of ordinary clay is chosen from just an amorphous pile of clay heaped on the floor. The potter has an end product in mind. Okay. Look at that. A vessel, the end product, that will be useful to its final owner and a credit to the potter's craftsmanship and experience. In Isaiah, the 64th chapter, verses 8 through 12. But now, O Lord, thou art our Father. We are the clay. And thou art our potter. And we are all the work of thy hand. Be not wroth very sore, O Lord, neither remember iniquity forever. Behold, see, we beseech thee, we are all thy people. I'll stop right there. You know, Isaiah is begging God here not to discard Israel as a worthless piece of pottery. We've been having lessons on Sunday morning about how God punished the children of Israel by shipping them off to Babylon. We've been hearing about Cyrus. Matter of fact, in Isaiah, verses 2 through 4, talking about Cyrus. Now, Gerald, we talked about Cyrus last Lord's Day. Who raised up the righteous man from the east, called him to his foot, gave the nations before him, and made him ruler over kings. He gave them as the dust to his sword, and has driven stubble in his bow. And then in verses 25 to 26, Isaiah as well. Let me see here. There it is. 41 and 25. I have raised up one from the north, speaking of Cyrus, and he shall come. From the rising of the sun shall he come call upon my name, and he shall come upon princes, as upon mortar, and as the potter treadeth clay. Okay. Perhaps now you are asking yourself, well, Paul, you've been talking about clay. We get the idea that we're the clay. God's the potter. He takes us from something pretty much useless, washes stuff out, makes it pliable, and has an end product in mind. Well, what got me going about this whole idea of clay and potter and us being made out of God's image, this last July, August, I had the Wednesday evening teen class. And our topic was the 12 apostles. And if you want to talk about ordinary, seemingly useless, just read about the 12 apostles. God took 12 extremely ordinary people, as the world would see it, and made him into a force to be reckoned with. He took ordinary dirt, clay, minerals, washed things out with his teachings, made them more pliable, so he could mold them, teach them, and eventually send them out. They were perfectly ordinary in every way. Not one of them was renowned for scholarship or great oration. They had no track records as theologians. In fact, they were outsiders as far as the religious establishment of Jesus' day was concerned. They were not outstanding because of any natural talents or intellectual abilities. On the contrary, they were all too prone to mistakes, misstatements, wrong attitudes, lapses of faith, and bitter failure. No one more so than the leader of the group, Apostle Peter. Even Jesus remarked in Luke 24, verse 25, turn there. Luke chapter 24, verse 25. Then he said to them, O fools, and slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken, ought not Christ to have suffered these things and to enter into his glory? These guys weren't catching on. These apostles, these gentlemen who we now look upon as role models, they span the political spectrum. We're right smack dab in the middle of politics right now. One was a former zealot, a radical. In the eyes of the Romans, he was an insurgent, Simon the Zealot. But another had been a tax collector, a veritable traitor to the Jewish nation, and in collusion with Rome. At least four, and possibly seven, were fishermen and close friends as they grew up. They're all from Galilee. Those fishermen, rough. Y'all ever been around fishermen that, you know, not the folks who go out there on the weekend and toss it in for some bass once in a while. I'm talking people who make it a living. If you've seen any of those shows on the History Channel about these folks who go out there in the North Atlantic and fish for stuff like that. I've been around sailors a lot in my life. There's some pretty gruff, pretty salty fellows. Imagine taking Christ, taking some folks of that nature, like this, rough, useless individuals, and making them into something that would change the world. And so that kind of, I got thinking about that. Brother Tim said he was encouraged. He's encouraged every time we look at this, the Lord's table. I'm encouraged because if Christ can take men of the stature of the 12 apostles and turn them into a group that in fact changed the world, there's hope for me. There's hope for all of us. God called us in this state. There's some good quality clay in there. But boy, you gotta dig for it. You gotta get rid of everything else that's gonna interfere with you using it. The dirt and the minerals and the sand. There's hope for all of us. The 12 were personally selected and called by Christ. He knew them as only their Creator could know them. John 1 and 47. In other words, he knew all of their faults long before he chose them. I'm encouraged because there's hope for me. There's hope for you. There's hope for everyone that walks this planet. Many are called, but few are chosen. Many are called, and we're all called in this state, but many don't allow themselves to be washed and to be cleansed and to be purified and made pliable and moldable by the Creator and His Son Jesus. In Romans, the 9th chapter, Paul speaking in verses 21 through 23, "Hath not the potter power over the clay of the same lump to make one vessel unto honor and another unto dishonor? What if God, willing to show His wrath and to make His power known, endured with much long suffering the vessels of wrath fitted to destruction? Christ does not call us when we're like this. He doesn't call us when we look like this. Nice and pretty, something nice to behold. In 1 Corinthians, the first chapter, verses 26 through 29. "For ye see your calling, brethren, how that not many wise men after the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble, are called. He called the 12 apostles. They look nothing like this. He called the 12 apostles. They look like this. Dirty, grimy, pretty much useless to him. But he changed that. But God hath chosen the foolish things of the world to confound the wise, and God hath chosen the weak things of the world to confound the things which are mighty. And base things of the world and things which are despised hath God chosen, yea, and things which are not to bring to naught things that are mighty. And base things of the world and things that are despised hath God chosen, yea, and things which are not to bring to naught things that are, that no flesh should glory in His presence." It seems like these days the world looks to those who are rich, those who can catch a football, those who can hit a ball with a bat, those who can act, those who are, those who are like this. The world looks to folks like this. God looks to folks like this. So this is what we are, or perhaps what we were. God does not call upon the mighty to do His work. He called these 12 apostles, all of which disappointed Him severely at one time or another, but He stuck with them. In 1 John 2 and 16, "For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, and the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world." We came from the dust of the ground. We came from the world in a physical sense. But then God, and only God, and His Son Jesus, can transform us into something from the earth to, eventually, something that is usable to Him. I'm reminded of the Indiana Jones movie, The Last Crusade, where you got Indiana Jones, you got Indy, and this guy, and you've got a whole selection of cups in front of them. And they were told to choose the one that Christ drank from. Now, bear in mind, this is a movie. The famous guy, the rich guy, which one did he pick? He picked the one with all the jewels, and it looked really fancy. You know what happened to him if you've seen the movie. Oh, Indy picked the one that looked like this. Again, a movie, but kind of a good point. So he calls us, like I said, when we're like this clay and this dirt and this combination of sand and pebbles and minerals from the site that I went to. You can't do much with it. Like I said, it's hard. It's taken. I bust it up and dry. Just can't do a whole lot with it. In Daniel, the second chapter, I always think of Daniel, I think of clay. In verse 2 and 33, chapter 2, verse 33. His legs of iron, his feet part of iron and part of clay. You can have the most solid structure in the world, but if it's sitting on sand and clay, we know the song of BBS, the rains came down and the floods came up and the made house that was made with sand went kersplat. In order for us to be usable, he has to remove the impurities. Those impurities are sin. The issues that we have in this life. The lust of the eyes, the pride of life, as 1 John talks about. God and only God has to take this. And it's like in the description I had about doing pottery and clay work. They put in a big old little bunger, what it was called, and wash it. Get all those minerals and impurities and sand and pebbles out of there and make it like this. Now let's take a look at all three of these. We got the yucky dirt stuff. We got the nice pliable stuff. And we've got this. Picture this as us filled with sin, filled with impurities that need to be washed out. Now look at the good clay. That the bad clay, the yucky clay, has been washed very thoroughly. Look at that as baptism. And now it's clay that can be, like I said, molded, stretched, and ball. You can do pretty much whatever you want to with it. Just like that. And then finally, look at this. Bought this in Japan. Isn't that pretty? You can put stuff in there. You can just look at it, or you can use it, and it's usable now. So God can take us from useless to useful. But only God can do that. The world won't. If you're here this morning, you're still like this, or perhaps you're like this, and you've been rolling around the dirt, as it were, and you wish to have your needs met in some way, shape, or form by this congregation. We ask you come forward and go from this to this. Eventually, to this. Have you stand and sing the gospel invitation?